Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Once again, folks, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, we've got some good articles coming from our friends at Hemmings today, talking about recalling his youth and some old Camaros and Firebirds that the editor drove. Got an interesting article about Lewis Hamilton. He's changing teams in Formula One, leaving the folks over at Mercedes to go to Ferrari. And there's a lot of thought about that. Also got a cool story about the new ZR1 Camaro. We'll catch you up on what's going on with General Motors and its robotic car. Got some weird and unusual automotive news. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Our first article is from the pages of Hemmings, which is a monthly automotive magazine that I receive. And the story is called Between the Lines, the F-bomb memories of my life. One, the highlight reel flashes back before my eyes and then fades to black forever. There will be many, many scenes starring Camaros and Firebirds or two. Obviously, like late nights with the chef and the circuit 1988 to 89 out for a pizza and a movie in a silver and red 78 Z28. Well, we'll hold hands until the next upshift or downshift while trying to hit some of those high notes on one of those Journey songs. The singing was really bad, but the times were really good. Or sitting in my gold 69 Camaro beneath a starry summer night. Or a country two-laner along with my buddy Kenny in his deep metallic and black Mustang, 1973 Mustang, and our pal Kim would stand fearlessly with arms raised and then drop them suddenly, which was Kenny's signal to drive off and lead me looking at his taillights for an entire quarter mile, again and again and again. Other memories are like deep tracks, scenes this I thought had been deleted from my memory, but recently resurfaced out of the archives to make up sort of an automotive-themed director's cut. I'm here for a few. I'm 14, 15 years old, staring across at my dad from the underneath of a driver's side of a $1,000 69 Camaro that I had yet to purchase. "Hey, the floor plans look okay. How do they look on your side?" he asked me. "Well, they look okay here too," I responded, having absolutely no clue what I was supposed to be looking at. And in the months to come, I'd learned that he'd been eyeing the Fisher Body approved floor stamping on his side while I'd been looking up at a Department of Transportation approved street sign that was covering a giant hole where your feet are supposed to go on my side of the Camaro. 10th or 11th grade English class, we'd been told to deliver a 5 to 10 minute speech on any topic we wanted. Naturally, I picked the first generation Camaro, which was my subject du jour. It could have been great if I actually prepared something. Instead, I just stood up and started babbling and wound up rambling about my stupid 69 Camaro. Ms. Keating mercifully gave me a B-, noting that my talk had been light on facts, but at least I had attempted to be entertaining. 40 years so or later, nothing's really changed. Age 15 or 16, my parents and my older sister were out of town, and her mint-conditioned carousel red 1976 Formula Firebird and the keys were left behind. She had bought the car just up the road from the original owner, who had driven it sparingly, and only in nice weather. I might have been old enough to have a learner's permit, but I couldn't swear to it. No matter, when the coast was clear, I absconded with the Formula and tested its limits of handling and traction. I had later hoped to have more. I tried to broker a financial arrangement with my parents to buy the Firebird when my sister was ready to sell it. Well, that deal fell through when my report card arrived, and it looked like I was on track to graduate at age 27 and then embarking on a promising career as a lumberyard flunky. Age 33-ish, I had conned my way into a paid position at a great newspaper writing car reviews that were light on facts, but at least I attempted to be entertaining. One day, the press folks dropped off a brand new 2002 35th anniversary Camaro SS. Forced air composite hood, 5.7 liter LS tuned up to 325 horsepower. Trimic 5 6 speed. Ordinarily, I'd been giddy to be able to borrow a car like this for an afternoon. Then it happened around 3 p.m. It started to snow. and snow. But all those years of driving winter beaters with bald tires finally paid off. I counter-stirred my way home without inflicting any damage to the General Motors Loaner Camaro. There are many, many more things in my archive, but there's not as much space as there used to be. And I'm not sure if I'm going to make any more new memories driving GM pony cars in the years to come, but I'm willing to find out. One thing I can say absolutely for sure, that my singing is still really, really bad. CNN Business, the headline reads, GM is pulling the plug on its robo-taxi efforts. General Motors is pulling the plug on its efforts to develop a fleet of driverless taxis and will focus on a driver-assisted feature that would require a driver to be ready to take control of the car, according to a company press release on Tuesday. GM is dropping the robo-taxi efforts given considerable time and resources that it would take to scale the business, along with the increasingly competitive nature of the robo-taxi market, in a statement from General Motors. The Detroit-based automaker's robo-taxi efforts have been run by a company called Cruise, which General Motors owned 90% of. Many of Cruise's employees who have worked on the self-driving technology will be shifted over to General Motors to work on its driver assist features for the privately owned cars such as Super Cruise, a hands-off drivers-on feature that is now offered on more than 20 General Motors vehicles. GM said the move will cut costs by an annual number of $1 billion once the combination is complete. GM said it instead will focus on the driver-assisted features rather than the autonomous vehicles. Developing a fleet of robo-taxis would have required more than $10 billion, according to the company. GM faces competition in the robo-taxi market from Google's Waymo unit in a partnership with Uber, as well as a ride-hailing and taxicab services that humans currently use. Earlier this fall, Tesla announced that its driverless vehicles without steering wheels, brakes, or accelerators will be ready for taxi service. Also, they would allow drivers to rent out their Tesla's services when they're not using them as cars. But GM has decided that it no longer makes sense to compete in this sector. CEO Mary Barra told investors on Tuesday that the company has decided the robo-taxi service was not a part of its core business and is shifting its self-driving technology efforts to the driver-assisted features that it currently offers in many of its cars. Cruise also came under fire over the past few years after an October 23 incident in which a self-driving taxi in San Francisco hit a pedestrian and dragged a woman along the side of the road for 20 feet. California authorities then ordered the company to halt operations as a result, and GM subsequently suspended service nationwide. Last month, Cruise agreed to pay a $500,000 fine as a part of a deferred prosecution agreement that resolved a potential federal criminal charges for providing a false record to the National Highway Transportation and Safety Administration after that accident. Now, October 2023 incident happened after a woman who had already been hit by another car that a human was behind the wheel. GM then advocates for self-driving vehicles have insisted that self-driving cars can become safer than those driven by humans. GM has also set goals for electrification and autonomous technology produce cars with zero crashes, zero emissions, and zero congestion. The decision to stop funding the robo-taxis is a clear step back from that target, but it did not represent a total abandonment of fully autonomous cars, Barra said in a statement on Tuesday. Cruise has been an early innovator in autonomy, Barra said in her statement, and she also said combining Cruise's efforts for self-driving vehicles with GM's efforts to provide assistance to drivers will help advance our vision for the future of transportation. So GM says, yep, not so fast. We think this is not a business that we need to be in right now, and we're going to take that investment and put it into our Super Cruise element for our passenger cars, and we'll see where this next step takes General Motors. Let's talk a little Formula One news from the website Planet F1. The headline reads, Ferrari chairman must have rocks in his head in a sad reveal regarding Carlos Sainz. Well, that's the claim of former Formula One team owner Eddie Jordan, who has revealed that Carlos Sainz and his father were reduced to tears as they prepared to bid farewell to Ferrari at the final race of the Formula One season last week. Now, Lewis Hamilton, who will turn 40 in January, announced back in February of this year that he would join Ferrari on a multi-year contract starting in the 2025 season, ending his long and successful association with Mercedes. Now, the early announcements meant that both Hamilton and Williams-bound Sainz were forced to spend the entire 24 Formula One campaign with their current employers, with the knowledge that they would part at the end of the year. Despite the crushing blow that his Ferrari contract would not be renewed, Carlos Sainz produced arguably one of his most impressive seasons to date in Formula One, with collecting victories in Australia and in Mexico. Now, although Hamilton did manage wins in Britain and Belgium, he was also heavily beaten by his teammate George Russell in qualifying, with the seven-time world champion admitting that he is definitely not as fast anymore toward the end of the season. Now, appearing on the Formula for Success podcast, Jordan claimed that Hamilton's public concerns over his lack of one-lap pace sent alarm bells off as Ferrari prepared to welcome the British driver next month. He argued that the folks at Ferrari made a huge mistake in opting to replace Carlos Sainz, and who still doesn't quite understand why he was not being retained as Charles Leclerc's teammate. Jordan said, "I got a lot of guffs for what I said about Lewis going to Ferrari. Now, when people say things like, 'I don't think I'm fast enough anymore,' that registers in my head. And I'm such a person that, yes, I believe in talent, yes, I believe in performance, and yes, I believe in speed. But I'm also a psychological person, and I know what's going on inside the brain. And fundamentally, very often what happens there gets replicated on the job. Whether you're driving a car, a truck, a train, a crane, it really doesn't matter. It's how you approach the moment. So do I think that this time next year I'll say, 'Wow, Lewis is amazing'? Well, I'm hoping I'm able to say that, but at the moment, I know his teammate is quick. And by the way, I saw Carlos Sainz. Who in their right mind would replace him? They must have rocks in their head. I'm very close with his father, and I spoke to him and told him he had done such a great job, and he was in tears. And Carlos Jr. was in tears himself. He still doesn't quite understand why he was let go. And to be honest, neither do I." Now, Jordan's fellow pundits, former McLaren and Red Bull driver David Coulthard, suggested that Ferrari simply found the allure of Lewis Hamilton, the most decorated driver in Formula One history, just too hard to resist. He claimed that the Hamilton's decision to walk away from his current team has also solved the problem for them, Mercedes, allowing that team to avoid an awkward conversation about ushering the British driver into retirement. Now, Mercedes has also announced the Italian Grand Prix teen sensation Andrea Antonelli will be Hamilton's successor. Coulthard said, "I guess it's just simply the draw of a seven-time world champion, the most successful driver in all stats, poles, wins, and all those good things, beside your name, was just simply too irresistible." And let's remind ourselves, when this announcement came back, he is going to Ferrari. And there was also a little bump in the stock market, too. Reflecting on Lewis Hamilton's time at Mercedes, in many ways, this decision saves Mercedes a lot of issues. They get to celebrate an incredible, successful partnership, all Lewis's victories in Formula One, all with Mercedes-Benz power. But it had to come to an end at a certain point. And this time means, well, it's all over here. Ferrari, good luck. Let's assume Ferrari gives him a winning Grand Prix car. And his teammate's pretty quick, and it's going to take him some work to get there. It's slightly confusing by standards. A lackluster year, he was able to put a strong finish on last weekend in Abu Dhabi. But it's almost a last hurrah at Mercedes. And the good news is he schooled George Russell on how to drive a Grand Prix car. So we'll see. Yeah, Lewis Hamilton didn't have the greatest year, but the reality is he still is Lewis Hamilton. And we're going to find out next year when he puts on the red helmet and drives for the prancing horse at Ferrari. Pages of Hemmings. The article says, 1973 to 1974 Pontiac Trans Am Super Duty 455. Prices for these two-year birds continue to soar. Well, last year, a 74 Trans Am powered by its original Super Duty 455 engine, four-speed manual, changed hands at an auction for a lofty $134,000. Now, it was no run-of-the-mill car, of course. Two owners, 16,000 miles from new, original paint, and reportedly rolling on its factory Uniroyal tires. Price-wise, that was a recent high point for the low-production SD455 Trans Am. The two-year-only Trans Am were introduced in 73, and the best chance of owning one of these is a 74, as productions peaked at 943, according to the SD455registry.com. Of those 74 Trans Ams, 731 were automatic transmissions, and just 212 were four-speed manuals. Now, if you go to 73, just 272 SD455s were produced. Of those, 180 were automatics and 72 were four-speeds. The time to have bought this particular 74 Trans Am might have been back in 2012 when it sold at auction in Auburn, Indiana for $93,000. Over a decade span, the car was just driven a few hundred miles, but appreciated $41,000. And the original owner didn't do too bad for holding onto this car for decades. The new car was stickered at then a whopping $5,500, but the owner scored a $1,000 discount from the dealer Jacobson Pontiac in Woodville, Wisconsin, where he happened to be an employee. Now, a low-mileage, time capsule car sold at auction doesn't really make a trend. This illustrates that the ride that these Trans Ams are on is a good one. The early 2000s average value ranges from $10,000 to $30,000 for a number 3 example, while a concourse car at that time might have fetched $60,000. Now, the Trans Am continued through the 2010s, and they could have traded for a $70,000 or upwards of $200,000, and that's what happened at Mecum Auction in Indianapolis this year in May, when a Brewster Green 73 Trans Am SD 4-speed sold for $260,000, the high water mark for this car in a public sale that we are aware of. Pontiac's second-generation Trans Am carried a torch of high performance when virtually every other big block American muscle car was being retired at the time. The 455 was available in the TA through 1976, but the limited-run SD 455 with all its good stuff is really the car you want. Where will the prices go from here? Well, the last of the breed Trans Ams, I'll wager they'll continue a slow and steady rise for the foreseeable future, with record prices climbing over for over-restored or excellent original examples. And I can tell you, folks, my neighbor, Mike, had that car. It was white with blue accents, and it was illustrious. I still remember as a child oogling that in his garage and saying, someday maybe I can have a cool car like that. Well, never got a TA, but I guess there's still time if I have the money. Well, I've mentioned that I'm so excited I picked up this 2017 Grand Sport Corvette, so now I'm definitely interested in everything I see regarding Corvettes. And speaking of that, the headline reads, Corvette ZR1 hits 233 miles per hour. Well, Chevrolet's flagship sports car made its record books once again when a 2025 ZR1 achieved a verified two-way average of 233 miles per hour on a high-speed oval test track in Germany, making it the fastest production car of the American automaker, and the fastest production car costing less than $1 million. One of the drivers for this event was General Motors President Mark Roos, who said, setting the top speed record in the Corvette ZR1 was a true triumph for Corvette and Chevrolet, also an exhilarating and surreal experience for me personally. Now, the Corvette ZR1 achieved this record speed at a red line in sixth gear, verified over multiple runs thanks to its mid-mounted LT7 V8 double overhead cam engine with twin turbochargers, making over 1,000 horsepower. So congratulations, Corvette, 233 miles per hour top speed. Well, time for a little weird and unusual automotive news from our friends at the New York Post. The angry Subaru driver crashed his car through the dealership after he claimed he was denied a refund. Quote, I hit a breaking point. Well, a disgruntled Utah man smashed his car into the storefront of a dealership that he had bought the car earlier in the day after he was allegedly denied a refund when he discovered his new ride had mechanical issues. Well, Michael Lee Murphy, 35, bought a used Subaru Outback from Tim Dale Mazda in Southtown, a dealership in Sandy, Utah, a suburb of Salt Lake City, for $4,000 on Monday, according to the folks over at Fox 13 News. However, Murray allegedly said he was sold a lemon, a vehicle whose manufacturing issues jeopardized the car's safety soon after he snagged his new wheels. Murray said he returned to the dealership and asked for a refund, but was told by management the car was sold as is and could not be returned. Now, the manager, Tyler Slade, said the dealership also told Murray before he bought the Subaru that the car needed work, according to the media outlet. There were some clear facts about this car that was not retail, Slade said. It's going to need more inspecting and some more work. Furious over being denied a refund, Murray allegedly threatened to ram his car into the dealership unless it refunded his money. We were like, whoa, we don't need to do that. Sit down, we can figure something out. We can find a solution, Slade recounted. However, the irate customer wasn't having it. Murray then exited the dealership, got into his vehicle, and within minutes drove the vehicle through the front of the building, according to the Sandy City Police Department. A wild video recorded inside the dealership shows Murray driving the car directly through the dealership's glass doors and taking out a desk. "I told you guys, I told you," Murray shouted as he walked over the shattered glass and ripped off his jacket and exited the building's destroyed front doors. A shocked employee, pleading for coworkers to call the cops, rushed over to the Subaru and shut its engine off. A disgruntled-looking Murray can be seen pacing outside the building as the video ends. Police said about 7 salespeople were at the front of the store when Murray drove through it. "I was actually just outside the building, but I heard the noise. As you can imagine, it was a big bang, a lot of scrambling employees, and there were lots of shuffling going on the last minute before the customer rammed through the front doors," according to the sales manager, Slade. The good news is nobody was injured during the incident, although the dealership estimated about $10,000 in damages for the accident. Slade revealed to the company that they offered Murray his money back or a different car before he rammed into the front of the building. Murray was arrested and charged with criminal mischief, reckless endangerment, economic interruption, according to jail records. He was released from jail on Tuesday. Following his release, Murray spoke to Inside Edition, saying his rage over being denied a refund caused him to, quote-unquote, reach his breaking point. "I was just really angry about and upset about my money," said a remorseful Murray as he explained. "I just kind of blacked out for a second." He also acknowledged that he probably shouldn't have driven the car through the front of the dealership. "I guess I just hit my breaking point." Well, I can understand the frustration of not getting the car you thought, but I think this, it takes it to another level. Well, time to talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA right now. The average gas price in the United States, folks, we're knocking on the door, $3.02. Average gas price here in Arizona, $3.12. Our friends over in New Mexico, $2.71 a gallon. Utah, $2.95. Over in California, still $4.32. Texas, $2.56. Oklahoma, $2.51. All right, let's see what's going on with here on our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. Let's check out the region right now. $2.37 will get you a gallon of gas at the Fast Trip in Casa Grande. The Quick Trip in Casa Grande, $2.39. How about this? The Quick Trip out in Goodyear on Australia Parkway, $2.39 as well. Casa Grande, $2.45 at Circle K. All right, let's see what's going on here with our gas here in Metro Phoenix. All right, so $2.64 at the Walmart in Scottsdale on Northside Boulevard. The 7-Eleven on West Bell Road, 53rd Avenue and Bell Road at $2.68. The Love's Travel Stop at $2.69 down in Tolleson. The Costco over in Scottsdale at $2.69 as well. And Sam's Club, $2.74. So there is some cheap gas out there in the metro. Look at the world gas prices as well. So Iran, Libya, and Venezuela are still less than 13 cents for a gallon of gas. Can you believe that? And if you go all the way to the most expensive place, well, how about Iceland? $8.28. Monaco, $8.48 a gallon. And if you happen to live in Hong Kong and you want to drive a vehicle and it uses gasoline, you're going to pay $12.53 a gallon. Well, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I've always loved your radio show and now your podcast, and even visited your office in Cambridge, Massachusetts once. You weren't there. Your staff said you were busy taking your second nap of the afternoon. Anyway, as a driver, I've always tried to avoid the jackrabbit starts to improve my fuel economy. Now I drive an electric vehicle and wonder if the law of physics apply the same as how you accelerate an electric car. Am I saving range by accelerating more slowly, or is it more fun just to step on it? And that's from Chris. Well, I would say it's more fun to step on it, and every electric car I've done the same thing, just for the thrill. Now, a theoretical physicist will tell you that in an electric car, how quickly you accelerate makes no difference. Whether you take 1 second or 60 seconds to get up to 60 miles an hour, you're still using the same number of kWs to move the car's mass. End of story. Now, there is a reason that the newspaper doesn't hire theoretical physicists to answer your car questions. In the real world, there are losses and inefficiencies, even in a battery electric propulsion system. They're primarily due to things like heat and resistance. Now, you can experiment this for yourself, Chris. Top off your battery and then drive the same route under the same temperatures and same weather conditions. On the first pass, do everything gently. On the next one, floor it every time you take off until you get to your traveling speed. Then see how much range you have left when you get home. I think you'll see a difference. Not as much as if you were flooring a gas-powered car, because electric motors are much more efficient, but I think you'll see some loss of range. Now, range aside, many other reasons we advise against hard acceleration still stand, even if the car is electric. When you slam your foot on the accelerator, you start a chain reaction of force and stresses that connect every part of your car, from your drivetrain right down to the screws that hold your dashboard together. Now, it's less injurious in an EV because the electric motor really doesn't care. It's just magnets spinning on a shaft, rather than pistons and connecting rods flying up and down. There's no transmission on most EVs, so that's something you don't have to worry about stressing out as well. But you still have axles, suspension system, and hundreds of body welds that are stressed every time you run that hard acceleration. Now, I don't want to be a buzzkill, Chris. The acceleration of even the most pedestrian electric vehicles is pretty thrilling. And if that's what tickles your berries, well, don't let me stand in the way. But it's still not 100% cost-free. Yeah, and I can tell you, folks, having ridden a couple Teslas, that acceleration of an electric vehicle is mind-blowing. And one of the reasons I don't want to drive one, because I won't like my other cars then. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.